This episode of Tub Talk is brought to you by Avast Business. With over 435 million active users of Avast products, if you haven't already taken a look at what Avast Business is offering, now might be the time. Visit tubblog.co.uk/Avast for all the links to the details. Right now, though, let's jump into our featured interview. Hey folks, Richard Tubb here, back again with another episode of Tub Talk, and I'm super excited today because I'm joined by my friend, Eamon Moore. Now, Eamon has been involved in the technology industry since 1995, and he's spent his last few years as a technology entrepreneur. He's built and sold a managed service provider business. He's founded a business intelligence business. We'll talk more about that. And additionally, he's currently raising investment for an artificial intelligence-based music intelligence company. So this guy really is a technology entrepreneur. He's also an advisory council member at Digital Business Ireland, and simply put, is one of the most progressive tech entrepreneurs that I know. Eamon, welcome to Tub Talk.
Great. Well, thanks for having me, Richard. And that's some introduction. I hope I live up to this on this call. But no, thank you for having me. It's great to talk to you.
It's my pleasure. And obviously, you're at home in whereabouts in Ireland today?
So in Dublin.
In Dublin.
Yeah. So in Rathfarnham in Dublin. So we're lucky enough. We've a large park beside us, Marley Park, which has been good over lockdown with the kids and that kind of stuff, and get a bit of exercise. So it's a good location to be if you're going to be locked down.
Yeah.
But it's a nice part of the world.
We were talking just before we came on air, so we are recording this we're in June 2020, so we're coming to the tail end of the lockdown for most countries in the world now. But you and I, the last time we saw each other face-to-face, I mean, we only live like 50 minutes apart from Dublin to Newcastle-upon-Tyne, and we were on the west coast of the States, weren't we, in San Diego,
yeah. We had a good day that day.
We did have a good day that day for lots of different reasons, but so you were saying just before we came on air that you're looking forward to getting out there and travelling again, because you do a lot of travelling, don't you?
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah, for various reasons, you know, whether it be customers or business or partnerships that we have outside of Ireland, you know, particularly in the US, also for raising investment among the other businesses. There's a lot can be done over Zoom calls like this, but you can't beat kind of face to face, you know. And I think it's and I think a lot of it has changed for good for better, you know. Certainly in terms of you'll have meetings now that can be just as productive over Zoom, so you won't have to go and do face to face for absolutely every single engagement. And so I think we're all going to be in a better space after this and coming out of lockdown, in terms of the value that we get from the various meetings and face to face interactions that we will have.
Yeah, agreed. So let's rewind a little bit first. Let's start at the beginning. So I mentioned you've been in the tech industry since 1995. Can you give us an insight into your journey from Dublin City University to where we are today?
Yeah, sure. Yeah. So I started in DCU in 1998. It was a degree in computer applications. My tech career had started a little earlier. I was lucky enough that I worked in two organizations during my school years. One was a company called CSK Software, which was owned by Dermot Desmond, a highly successful entrepreneur in Ireland and globally. So I learned my trade there. And then went on to work in another company, ESAT, which is essentially bought by BT then as well. Dennis O'Brien founded that company. So two great real entrepreneurs that I managed to work in their companies when I was from the age of 15 up to about 20, you know, during my school years and my university years as well. So it was a great ground to learn the trade to you know, and I learned quite a lot then. Like I was a kid, I was young, but I was dealing with people who were in their 20s, 30s, 40s, 50s, like, you know, being socially, being able to deal with people, being able to interact with them on a business level. I always look back at that time as being key to how I'm able to deal with people now and have been throughout my career. So that was a really interesting time. Went and did a degree in computer applications. It was very much a programming course, you know, so that's not my forte. I was always the front of house person, you know. I was always the presenter. So when we did team projects, it was me that kind of did the presenting piece. It was me that kind of talked to the lecturers, did a lot of the research, the background piece, while some of my friends in college would have been far stronger at the programming end. So we were a great combo, and I loved that. And, you know, they were interested in the program piece, and they were very near nervous around getting up and presenting. I just love that. You know, again, I probably bring that back to my times in CSK in particular, when at 15 or 16, I had to get in front of fairly senior people and discuss things with them. So that was a great mix. Came out of that degree in 2002, and there was a real challenge in the market then as well, like the dot-com bubble had burst, you know, so certainly years that had gone in ahead of us, and students were being headhunted well before the final exams were carried out. Like if you were looking good, if you were in some of the top tier students in that the degree, you were being headhunted 6 months ahead of time. That didn't happen in our year. And a lot of us had different decisions to make. Some people left technology altogether and went into to government roles, you know, other kind of business roles. And I had an opportunity to consult. And that's when I founded my first company, Emit, as a result of that, straight after university.
Yeah, our careers followed not a dissimilar path. So I've often talked about, you know, I've been really lucky to be able to spend time with some of the brightest and most successful people in the IT industry. I know you have as well. We founded our MSP business around the same time. I think the first time you and I met was when you were running the MSP, and I believe it was in Dublin. I was perhaps speaking at an event over there. Would that be right?
Correct. Yes, that's right. Yeah. I remember it well.
Yeah, so tell me more about Emit, starting the MSP, and what led to you exiting that business.
Yeah, so that started in 2003. I started on my own as a sole trader. I was a consultant to a number of businesses throughout Ireland, essentially acting as an outsourced IT manager consultant, if you like. We did that for a number of years, brought the company limited in 2008, started to build up a team then, and it morphed into an IT support business. So people were kind of saying, we love the consultancy piece, we love that IT management piece, but where do we go when you're not here? You know, so we built out a small support team, and we kept that model going for a number of years and through the recession as well. And it was a good model in terms of that outsourcing piece. So we somewhat had a good recession, I suppose, in that business. And then we started to look at cloud early days, and particularly with the likes of Google. We were one of the top partners for Google Apps in Ireland at the time. And we saw good traction in that market. We were really just moving email to the cloud. You know, that was all we were doing. But we built quite a good business on that side. And then around 2013, 2014, I got a nice knock on the door from Microsoft saying, we're back in the cloud game. We're realigning our strategy. We're good to go. We all know we've had some bumps in the road, but this is a journey that we're taking. And they presented that vision to me. And they said, would you like to come on this journey with us? You know, and we said, absolutely. You know, and we looked at that as an opportunity in the market. We were developing an MSP business. We weren't very much hardware driven and hardware focused. So we didn't have that reliance on hardware in our organization, which meant we could adapt to a cloud journey with the likes of Microsoft quite easily, because we didn't have that big hardware ship to turn, you know, and that real big change in business model. So we when we looked at our competitors in the market, we said, here's an opportunity to jump on this. And we did. In 2013, we moved all our customers to the cloud with Microsoft, and then it just kind of took off from there. You know, we two great partnerships. We like focus was a huge part for us back then. We had a lot of partnerships in the ship to that point. We decided to focus on Microsoft and Dell, and we had great success with both. We ended up winning global awards with both those partners around 2015 and 2016, which was just a fabulous time doing business, and it was great for our team as well. And then ultimately, as you said, there we had an opportunity to exit that business in 2018, which we took. You know, 2016, there was a lot of offers. When we won Global Partner of the Year with Microsoft in 2016, a lot of people came knocking, you know, Ireland, UK, Europe. But we decided, let's keep going as we are, because we were starting to build out our data business as well and our BI business. And we said, let's keep going. But in 2018, I just saw the way the market was going, and we decided to take the leap.
Yeah, it's an incredible story, and I remember at the time when you won the Partner of the Year award and that, and just being so chuffed for you, because I knew how much you focus on these relationships, and that still holds true to today. Tell us a little bit more. So you were Emit were a leading partner in Ireland with both Dell and Microsoft. In fact, there was barely a week gone by at the time I remember that I didn't see you in some sort of Microsoft sort of promotional campaign or whatever. But how would you describe your attitude towards vendor relationships? Because I would say what you did differed from most MSPs at the time.
Yeah, like I suppose when we looked at it, we had about 20 partnerships, I'd say, in the industry. You know, and there was a lack of focus in EMEA at the time. We were trying to do a bit too much, so we decided to consolidate those partnerships with a couple of vendors who could help us cover that breadth and have that expertise. And that was the best decision that we ever made, because from a technical point of view, we had more focus. From a leadership point of view, then we were able to focus our attention on two partners. And I think that was very it was a great move for us. You know, it was the best thing we ever did in that organization. It provided clarity for our customers as well in terms of who we were leading with. And listen, there were two big brands, like, you know, who didn't know who Dell and Microsoft were, no matter what business you were in. So going there and having achieved success with them and being rated as one of their top partners in Ireland and opening a lot of doors for us. So it was really good, you know, and we innovated as well. You know, I remember with Dell when they had the SonicWall brand under their remit as well, like we launched Firewall as a Service into the Irish market, and we were the first partner to do so. And we worked closely with Dell and the likes of Exertus as well. And on the DISI point of view to do that. And that was new to the market. It was exciting. It was something we really believed in and bringing that into it as a service model. And I suppose it's showing now that many partners now in the MSP space have built that model into their organization. So it was nice that we were one of the first to be out there doing that. So I think that co-innovation piece was absolutely key, and to be involved in some of those early decisions and those early solutions that were brought to market was really great for us as an organization.
Yeah, it was wonderful to see. And again, congratulations on sort of building and selling that business, because I think it was a vindication of just all the hard work that you'd put in, and then that type of model works. What was, if you don't mind me asking, what was the catalyst for you exiting EMIT, exiting the MSP?
Well, I think so. We, after 2016, we started to see data, BI opportunities, you know, particularly in our relationship with Microsoft and that partnership. And I started to look at the market, you know, and I'm lucky that I do a lot of work with the likes of Microsoft and other partners in the States. And I sit on various advisory councils over there. So you do get to see, you know, a kind of insight into what's coming down the line, you know. And it did appear to me that there was a lot of consolidation that was going to be required in the MSP market. You know, and I saw a change in the way, you know, that the likes of Azure, Office 365, security, all had to be configured, you know, and all that expertise that you really had to bring as an MSP compared to the old days, really, of that hardware implementation that you might do as an MSP. So I could start to see that coming into the market. But I could also then, on our data and BI business that we'd launched, we saw a lot of opportunity there in terms of, well, when people are and organizations are moved to the cloud by an MSP, who's going to come in and be that data and BI partner? And so we're running two businesses in one in EMIT. And both needed investment, you know, both needed highly skilled people. And what we saw in the market then, we said, okay, well, why don't we let MSPs who have the ability to scale further than we could bring an EMIT, let them do that, and then let us come in a kind of partner-to-partner engagement and be their data and BI partner to allow them to continue to add value to their customers. And that was, you know, I'm a big fan of partner-to-partner, as you know. It didn't work when we had both an MSP business and a data and BI business all rolled up into one when you're trying to partner with another MSP. So that formed part of the decision as well, that we wanted to be different in the market.
Was that because people saw it as a conflict of interests?
Yeah, I think the main concern was that if you were an organization like EMIT that had both sides of delivery to customers, there might be the danger, even with contractual agreements and everything, but there might be a danger the customer might say, well, can they be my MSP and my data and BI partner? It makes sense that we do it all with them, you know. So that just didn't work well. And I think the Irish market wasn't as mature for partner as other regions that we had done business in. That's changing now. So I think our timing has worked out well.
Yeah. And so the business intelligence business that you founded, Hikari Data Solutions, tell us a little bit more about the work that you do there. What does that look like?
Yeah, so we kind of brought our Microsoft relationship into this organization as well in Hikari. You know, it's very much built around, it started off being built around the Power BI platform, and is now in recent months part of our strategy is more aligned to the Power Platform. portfolio with Microsoft. So on the Power BI side, you know, we're doing a lot of engagements with customers around bespoke business intelligence data analytics requirements that they have. That could be anything like, you know, we have an Excel file that has just grown to an almighty size that needs to be automated, that needs to be visualized better. It can also be scenarios whereby customers have a number of platforms that they use in their organization and they want to bring all that data and analytics under one roof. And we've also developed products as well. So in EMIT, we did a lot in the professional services market. So we built a couple of products in the legal and accounting sectors. So our legal BI and accounting BI product, where we layered Power BI on top of the main practice management providers they have in that sector. And we built a whole product around that to give a suite of dashboards and reporting for legal firms and accountancy firms. So that's the Power BI business. And then as a result of our realigned strategy, we've now expanded out to Power Platform. This is pre-COVID, but now we're seeing a lot of work as a result of COVID in terms of automating workflows and processes and that kind of piece. And Power Platform sits really well there.
Yeah. What do you think business intelligence should mean to MSPs?
Yeah, I think, you know, so we brought business intelligence into EMIT very early, you know. So I remember we did a lot of integration projects with Autotask, with ConnectWise, and various other tools that we had that we were using in EMIT to bring BI front and center to us as an MSP. So, you know, as an MSP, I think it's really important that it's utilized internally across the various platforms, because there's quite a lot of platforms that MSPs have to use in order to deliver these service to their customers. So I think to bring it front and center what they do, we then brought another step forward and we brought business intelligence into the reporting element of what we do. So rather than sending a Word document or a PDF, like we sent a whole BI report to the customers that they could tweak with the data and mess with the views, etc. You know, so that was very important for us. And then I think thereafter, then I think more and more MSPs, they will always be the trusted partner of a business. They are, you know, they're heavily relied on, particularly now when you go through something like the pandemic and COVID. So now as organizations go to their MSP to say, you've helped me get set up security, you've helped me get set up remotely, etc. We're good on that side, but how can we get more out of what we have? How can we get more out of our data? How can we look at automating many of these workflows and processes that have really been highlighted as weak, as inefficient, because we're all working remotely now? And very often MSPs won't have that skill set. So I think bringing that BI layer, that automation piece, and bringing a trusted partner like ourselves in makes a lot of sense at the moment.
Yeah, and we'll include all the details of Hikari and how to get in touch with you and everything else in the show notes as well. I want to dig into, you know, some things that I think you've already talked about, that you're very famous for, and that's partner-to-partner solutions. Why do you see partner collaboration as being key to the future of managed services?
So, good question. So I think it's really around the portfolios that vendors have now and where an MSP fits. I deal a lot and I mentor a lot of Microsoft partners and MSPs around the world through that relationship that we have. You know, and some of them say to me, well, I'm a Microsoft Azure partner, you know, and, you know, I say, well, that's great. That's a pretty broad statement to make, you know. So I think you got to really know what you do, where your specialty is, how you're adding value for your customers, and then go and do that really well, you know, and bring in the best team to do it, have the best certifications and do that piece. And that's why I think the partner-to-partner piece makes sense, because you can't be everything to everyone. You got to come in, even if it's across a platform like Office 365 or Microsoft 365, you got to know what to do and do it well. And I think that value-added piece needs to come in, you know, and you can see this with the way vendors like Microsoft are dealing with that. They're now putting in facilities where multiple partners are recognized in a deal, whether that's to, you know, some of the clawbacks that you get, you know, and the likes of that. And I think that's really important. That's the way the market is going. So I think it's, you know, the right fit partner to come in. If I think back to the EMIT days, when we had an MSP business and we had a data and BI business, the makeup of the team is completely different. Like, the team was built differently. They taught differently. You never would have crossed over your MSP team with your data and BI team. They just, as I say, they're built differently. They have a different skill set. And that's, you know, I think that's the reason why I think that partner-to-partner piece is needed.
Yeah, absolutely. And again, it really strikes a chord with me because I've shared with you in the past that my MSP business was built off the back of those partner-to-partner collaborations and stuff. We hit much above our weight because we partnered up with other businesses to deliver solutions that we didn't necessarily have expertise in. So it's great, you know, that even going back when I ran an MSP many, many years ago now, but that's still happening today. And it's great to see that Microsoft are changing their way that they're rewarding those partner relationships as well, as you say, sort of making sure that the incentives and things are broken down.
I think the other thing as well, it's about scale as well. So if you look as an MSP or another partner, how am I going to scale? You can scale through those partnerships, you know, and I think what the pandemic has proven is like our partner engagements globally now have grown significantly as a result of COVID. So it goes to show that we can prove that this model will work in a remote scenario. So it doesn't have to be that in-person, face-to-face, P2P engagement in your region. It can stretch across multiple regions.
Yeah. What about the next level of partner engagement? What about actually starting a business with someone? So you're a tech entrepreneur. You've started lots of businesses. What are your thoughts on forming businesses out of existing collaborations?
Yeah, so that's something that we're doing in our artificial intelligence business. It's an organization called Platinum Innovation that's based out of Dublin. So we had this concept around bringing artificial intelligence, machine learning to the music industry, to content decision makers in both the music industry, but also industries that have to make decisions around music, whether it be advertising, broadcast, etc. And so I had this concept that I put together. I brought it some of the contacts I had in Microsoft in the States. They backed us and said, listen, this is a really great concept. Let's work on this together. And then I said, okay, line me up with some of the best partners that you have in data and AI. And lucky enough, it was one of the partners that they put us together with. I knew the gentleman, the CEO. We'd spoken together on stage at Microsoft Inspire. And I suppose what happened then was we saw maybe this might be just a service delivery piece, you know, a project engagement. And then we got on so well that we saw the potential in this market that we decided to go into business together. And that was a complement of skills, but it was just a click between what is now our leadership team that we brought together as a result, predominantly a partner engagement. So it's the next level. It's really exciting. What gives me confidence is I know that in that organization we have the best of the best people. In terms of, it's all built on the Microsoft stack, as you'd imagine, given my background. But we have the best, and that brings huge confidence into our investors, into myself when I'm out doing the sales and business development piece. So I think it's really interesting. There has to be a lot of it's based on trust. You know, trust is absolutely key, and we have bucket loads of us in that organization, so it's great. So it is the next evolution of partner to partner. Yeah,
I look forward to seeing where that goes as well. That's super exciting times for you with a really exciting sort of project that you've got going on there. Cloud, you've already mentioned, you know, you used to do Google, you were at the cutting edge back in the day, you're still at the cutting edge now, but in terms of cloud consultancy, there's an interesting situation for MSPs in that cloud has made life a lot easier in terms of monitoring and maintenance and all the things that the MSPs used to spend a lot of time delivering. However, the complexity of cloud security and technology, it's proving to be too much for MSPs to deliver things on their own, which comes back again to your conversation about seeking out partners. How do you see the cloud landscape, and how do you see partnership on cloud-based projects?
Yeah, so I think, you know, you see now the evolution of like managed security providers, you know, coming in, partnering with MSPs. I think that's great. You know, I think if anything kept me awake at night when I had an MSP, it was security, you know, about what could happen, what was the expectation of the customer in terms of what we had to deliver. So I really like that partnership piece coming together. I think you're right. I think automation is a great thing for MSPs because it gets a lot of that groundwork away. You know, you see a lot of things around templates, etc., and how they're installed and configured. I think honestly, what it will do is, you know, if I look at the selling of cloud and how you talk to customers about it, right when we started out with cloud, it was really just a lift and shift. It was more like I said, in the early days of Google, it was just like, you have a server, let's get rid of it. It could be plagued with problems. It's a lot to maintain it. Let's just get it up to the cloud and away we go. So that kind of piece then was the old way. Now I think it's more solution selling. It's about outcomes. So, you know, and it's about making sure that it's aligned with the expectations of the customer about what they really need as an organization and what they need technology to deliver upon for them. And that's a completely different conversation that we've had in the past as MSPs. And I think in order to either bring in people or train people in your organization to have those skills, I think you need to take away a lot of the previous workers there. So that's why I'd be a big fan of the automation piece, I said, a big fan of bringing in partners around security, because there's a whole other piece on the consultancy side that needs to be done in order for customers to get that value and to be able to use these technologies for the greater potential of their organization.
Yeah. You are a consummate networker. people say to me, Richard, you know everybody in the industry. And I'm like my little black book is probably a quarter the size of yours. Like, you know absolutely everybody in the industry. But for those MSPs perhaps listening to this, and, you know, you've been wildly successful with the partner model, and you're evangelizing the partner model to others, but perhaps the MSPs listening to this are, well, I like this, but I'm nervous about reaching out to somebody that I might perceive as my competitor. How do you go about, you know, the opening of those relationships? How do you reach out to a company you think this might be a good partner for us?
So I think it's twofold, really. Like, we would, on my various journeys and trips, you'd meet partners who I would reach out to, and you see a complimentary service there, perhaps, you know. And then I think it's a lot of time I would meet other CEOs, and I think it's driven by the CEO and the leadership team themselves, you know. And often when I meet them, I ask about their goals, where they want the organization to go to. You know, it's important then to see, you know, many businesses are not just in IT, but are lifestyle businesses, you know, and that one that would just, I'm happy, you know, with the package I can give myself, it secures my family and my requirements, etc. And a lot of time, those kind of businesses are not ones that are going to want to scale, and not ones that are particularly a good fit for the partnership model. So for me, it's important when you ask those questions about what the ambition of the company is, and where they want to go, and how they see growth in their organization. As I said earlier, it's a great bottle to scale in. You know, if you think of, if you can get a partner model right, you actually have the salespeople, the marketing people of another organization promoting the services that you do at little or no cost to you. So it's a great model if it works like that. So I think it's really down to the ambition of the organization is where I start to see a fit. If there's something that they want to grow and scale, then I think the other pieces can be ironed out, you know. And I always go back to trust. It always starts with one deal. You know, it has to be, one deal has to go well. There has to be a good fit. There has to be a good interaction between both partners. And the main thing is that there's clarity for the customer. The customer cannot get confused by a partner-partner engagement. They're about confusion about who do I ring for this, who do I ring for that. They are the things that need to be ironed out and run smoothly in the initial days. And then I think that's my secret to success and a formula to success for that model, I think.
Yeah, good advice. I like it. And talking of trust and talking of networking, I've already mentioned the fact that last time we caught up in person was in San Diego. I didn't actually know you were in town. And then our mutual friend is the godfather of CRM, John Ferrara of Nimble CRM, actually said, "Hey, Eamon's in town. You two should get together." And as we've mentioned, we had a good a good day there. What, you know, John, yeah, being the founder, John being the founder and CEO of Nimble CRM, what's your relationship with Nimble as a company?
Yeah, so it kind of stemmed from the Microsoft partnership as well, you know, in terms of the SMB play for CRM, you know, and where Dynamics may have been a fit or not a fit in some SMBs, or perhaps how another CRM platform could lead to be a gateway for growth that would ultimately end in a move to Dynamics for the customer. And I knew there was a gap there in terms of how do you make it simple for SMBs to start using CRM. And I think that for me, it was the simplicity of the model around Nimble and just really cool things that they did. It was, you know, like yourself, I do a lot on social, and McKean network on social as well. And I just loved John's approach to using social as a center point for content, contact and unified management. And, but like the one thing, you know, that really sold me on it was the prospector tool that they have. So you'll know this as well. Like, you know, so for all the years of using CRM that I've been involved with, we had a Dynamics practice in email as well. The one thing that always really was a bugbear for salespeople, business development people was, how do I get a new contact into CRM? You know, and you know, I remember in the older days of CRM, you go, you have a good meeting, you think it's a good prospect, you go back to a coffee shop or an office, whatever. You could be typing for 25 minutes, getting all that data in, copy and pasting their website in, their fax number in, their email address in, because marketing would be given out to you that you didn't have them, their email address, so we can market to them before GDPR, of course. And so it just, it, like my buzz of getting a good deal or meeting or prospect was gone by the amount of work that had to do. And then when John showed me how they kind of bring the information in from LinkedIn or Twitter via the social information that's out there, like I was adding prospects within 30 seconds, you know, like before they were gone out the door, you know, of a meeting perhaps. And it just did that changed for me. And I just love what they're doing. They're obviously heavily involved with Microsoft, their integration with Office 365, common data services as well. And he's great to be around, you know, and he's hugely successful. And not only do we do a lot of business together, I've learned a huge amount from him.
Yeah, John must be, you know, I said he was the godfather of CRM. There's the man who really basically started the whole CRM movement. And I must get him on the podcast, actually, Eamon. So one of the things I'm going to make a note to do is to reach out to John.
Yeah, that'll be a good one.
After that. But thanks for sharing that. You've already mentioned sort of mentors, people who are influential on you. You include John in that list. Who else has been influential on your growth as a tech entrepreneur?
Yeah, so I think, you know, I often get asked this, you know, and you say, there's no one person, you know, for me personally, there's no one that I aspire to be. I'm a firm believer in your own personal brand. I aspire to be the personal brand that I want to create for myself and the organizations that I deal with. But I think when I look at it's everyone that I meet, everyone that I'm involved with, whether they be CEOs, leadership teams, or any roles in organizations, I always take upon myself to try and learn a little bit from everyone, you know, and that's, you know, that could be anything from the travels, from social media, from listening to people on podcasts, from attending events as well. I think I like to take a little bit from those that I see out there and try and bring that all together, you know, because it's like you can listen to somebody talk for an hour about one aspect of their career. I always find there's that one key moment, you know, that they say something that really resonates with you. And what resonates with me in the same hour of talk could be a different thing that resonates with you perhaps. But I always just like to take those one key moment and learn from a group of people that I've come across. So I'm lucky enough to, you know, I've met with and had conversations and meetings with some of the top people in the industry and more than yourself, you know, and it's a gift really, you know, and whether it's been on a plane with them, traveling back in the States, or having coffee with them, or meetings or partner meetings, it's been great. And I think that's really what has helped me growing as an entrepreneur and learn through my career, you know.
Yeah, I couldn't agree more. And I, you know, I share this as an open secret. The reason I started this podcast is because I was having incredible conversations just full of so much valuable advice and golden knowledge and things. And I was thinking, you know, this is brilliant. You know, I should have shared this with other people. So I started recording the conversations. And I tell you, to this day, I still love doing it, sitting here and listening to people like yourself, just sharing openly and honestly about their journey. There's so much to be learned. So it's great to see that you were continuing that journey. Talking of which, what's next for you? And I say that with some trepidation because we've already covered a ton of stuff that you're already working on. But knowing you, there's more stuff in the pipeline. What's next, Raymond Moore?
Yeah, so well, I think our core areas of focus now will be building and scaling Hikari. We have a good platform there, with a great team and a great business. So that's one aspect. Obviously, on the artificial intelligence business and the music intelligence piece, there's a big opportunity there, you know. So we've a large investment round that will close soon. We're building a great team there in that organization, and that's going to take a lot of time and effort, but it's really exciting, you know. It's the opportunity there is huge, and we're delighted to be involved there. And then after that, yeah, who knows? As I mentioned, I turned 40 yesterday, so I'm told I have the best years of my life coming up now and then in the next 10 years. And there's great opportunities coming. You know, I think I've a lot of people reach out to me over the last 2 or 3 months with opportunities that they're seeing, particularly as a result of the pandemic. And there are a few good ones. There's a lot I'm saying no to. And I think, you know, I've learned myself, you know, at this stage now, like I've absolutely loved what we did with EMIT. It was predominantly based in the Irish market, but we reached global scale and global levels with those partnerships and that recognition. So now for me, it's all about scale, you know, and it's really about, it's about global scale. So when people come to me with opportunities, I'm not looking for something that's just going to say, let's address an industry in a given region or country. The question and the first thing I look at now is how can this scale and scale globally? And I think that for me is where I personally want to go in the next stage of my career.
Yeah. I know you get inundated as a tech entrepreneur with pitches, with opportunities. How do you decide what's worth having a conversation about and exploring further and saying no to? What's your decision-making process?
Some of it's down to gut, you know, when somebody pitches the idea to you, and you get a good feeling about it as well. I think the ones that really impress me, like you could talk about team, you can talk about technology, you can talk about background, like, and all that is important. The ones that really impress me out of the gates are the ones that have done the research with their markets or customers, you know. And I think it's when I talk to startups and being through this journey myself, everyone hates that bit, you know. They're all about either the tech or the idea, and at times there is a bit of a sense of if we build it they will come, you know. So you can't have that mentality really. So the ones that really impress me are the ones that know the market, know the customer base. They've taken the time to go out, signed up beta customers or interviewed them in detail, you know, and done it in not just their own country, who have actually managed to go out and attract people in, or customers who have an interest in the solution or technology that they have. And they've given the time to the start to say, yeah, great, we'll give you some feedback. And so it's those ones that have done that research and know the market and know the customers and then have all the good piece around the technology and the team. They're the ones that really get me excited from the start.
Good advice. I like it. So it should be clear to anybody listening to this that not only are you one of the most connected people in our industry, but you're one of the most interesting people in our industry, just working on cutting edge things. So for everybody listening to this, I would encourage you, you know, follow Eamon on social media. He puts some really interesting stuff up, but just looking at the conversations that Eamon's having, you can learn a lot. Eamon, if anybody listening wanted to continue the conversation with you directly, how could they best get in touch with you?
Yeah, well, I think social for me is probably the easiest one. So by all means, connect with me on LinkedIn or connect with me on Twitter. I think we'll share the details anyway, but it's at Eamon Moore. And they're the two easiest ones to get me. I spend a lot of time on social, so you'll probably get me there quicker than you get me on email.
Absolutely. Eamon, this has been an absolute pleasure to catch up with you. I'm so proud of what you've achieved with EMIT. I'm so excited by what you're doing with the current businesses and Hikari and the AI for music intelligence. It just blows my mind, some of the things that you're doing. I wish you all the best in the future, and thanks so much for joining us today.
Oh, great. Well, thanks for having me. Really enjoyed it, and great to catch up as always.
Cheers, Eamon.
Cheers.
Hey folks, Richard here. Thanks for listening today. I know you've got a ton of options for who you listen to nowadays, so I really appreciate your support. Do you have any feedback on this episode? Ideas for future guests? Tweet me at TubBlog using the hashtag TubTalk. I respond to every tweet and really appreciate your feedback. Richard here, and I wanted to give a really big shout out and to say a huge thank you to our friends at Avast for bringing this episode to you. In the face of increasingly complex threats targeting small and medium businesses, yesterday's methods are no longer enough. Cybersecurity must be quicker, smarter, and more reliable than ever before. Avast Business provide a range of powerful, easy to deploy security products and management platforms designed for IT solution providers and managed service providers. Avast Business offer a variety of cybersecurity products that are MSP friendly. You can choose from standalone antivirus products, managed antivirus products, cloud care for layered endpoint and network security services, backup and recovery, content filtering, email security, patch management, and a management console to easily deploy endpoint protection solutions to devices in your client networks. These solutions are all backed by the largest, most globally dispersed threat detection network in the world. If you've not checked out Avast Secure Internet Gateway, then I'd recommend taking a look at the video demo that Avast's Paul Fenwick and I recorded. It delivers a full security stack as a service that protects users wherever they go. With 30 years as a leading cybersecurity company and over 435 million active users of Avast products, if you haven't already taken a look at what Avast Business is offering, now might be the time. Visit tubblog.co.uk/Avast for links to all the details.